When his wife died at the hands of an intruder, things didn't quite add up. And as investigators dug deeper, it turns out he had many more ghosts like her in his past. Could it all just be a series of bad coincidences? This is the story of Thomas Randolph, the Black Widower of Las Vegas with four dead wives. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here, and hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. Thomas William Randolph Jr. had a problem with his wife, or his wives, I should say. They kept dying on him. Four out of the six of them were dead from things that seemed innocent enough at the time. But when the latest one was taken from him on May 8, 2008, while holding her steak and lobster leftovers, everything suddenly seemed a bit more suspicious. Tom met retired cosmetologist Sharon Koss on Match.com in the summer of 2005. She was from New York, but had been in Nevada for over 30 years. He was living in Utah, but drove to Vegas to take Sharon to a rock concert, and that completely won her over. The two were married on a cruise in Mexico in 2006 and renewed their vows soon after. He was her third husband, and she was his sixth wife. They had their problems, like any couple does. She played too much video poker for his taste, and she didn't like how much he spent on his medication. Normal things, nothing that would raise any red flags. They lived in Las Vegas and came home from a date at the Charcoal Room Steakhouse on May 8th at about 8:30 p.m. 57-year-old Sharon went inside ahead of Tom while he parked in the garage. When the 54-year-old followed soon after, he found Sharon dead, lying face down in the hallway. She had a gunshot wound to the head made with his own gun. Tom heard someone else still inside their home, so he retrieved another gun from the office. It was then that he came across a man in a black ski mask. They fought in the hallway, and Tom shot the man several times between the hallway and the garage. He then shot the man two more times in the head, just to be sure he was dead.
Now, this door was closed. I opened it up. I get right here, and Sharon's laying in the floor, face down. Her head's just barely, barely in the bedroom, if that. And I stopped right about here, had the door, said, "Sharon! Sharon!" And about right here, when I was like this, I was trying to kind of get a view. I thought I just seen like a shadow or something over this way. And I remembered that there's the 9mm right up here, because earlier I'd taken all my guns, put them in a suitcase, was going to take them to Utah and switch the guns around. Just reached up just like that, grabbed it, stuck it in my pocket, came around just like that. And about that time, he's right up on me. Just right up on me. And we actually touched right about here. And he's short. He's short. But he was doing something, going for something down in here. And as we got up in here, and he kind of rushed up on me a little bit, and that's when I just pushed him, boom, 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 and he started going out toward the shed. I don't know how many times I shot him, but I just kept right on going, boom, 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 and he's just laying there.
It was only that moment that Tom recognized the man he had just killed. It was a new friend of his, Michael Miller, a man he'd known for 4 or 5 months after they met outside of a convenience store. Miller did some handyman work for Tom from time to time. They had actually looked at jet skis together just that afternoon. Such betrayal. But even before authorities arrived, Tom had already made himself look like a suspect. While on a call with 911, the dispatcher had asked him to give his wife CPR multiple times, and he seemed to be doing everything but that. He was more concerned about making sure the supposed intruder was dead. He couldn't flip Sharon over. His back hurt. And then when the police did get there, the scene just didn't quite add up. This wasn't some Wild West shootout with broken windows and upset furniture. There was little evidence at all that a gunfight had happened in the hallway where it supposedly all started. There was no blood to be seen on the walls of the hallway, and the shell casings were all in the garage. There was indeed a black ski mask lying on the floor of the garage, but it wasn't near to Sharon's alleged killer, and it didn't have any sign of blood nor bullet holes. The path that the bullets took as they entered the man, Michael Miller, also didn't make sense in terms of Tom's telling of the events. Miller had been shot from the top of his skull, so someone had to be above him while he was on the ground. And the bag of stolen stuff that this supposed burglar was taking from the home just had some of Miller's clothes and cheap jewelry in it. Plus, Miller knew that Tom and Sharon were leaving to see Tom's parents in Utah the next day. Why wouldn't he wait until then to break in? As investigators looked into the case, they found that Tom had recently gotten 4 life insurance policies on Sharon, which is never a good sign, especially since she had taken him off of important documents like her will and the deed to their house without him knowing, after she found out that he'd been seeing an old girlfriend on the side. And this new friend who had killed Sharon, 38-year-old Michael James Miller, seemed like way more than just a casual jet ski shopping buddy. He and Tom had called each other hundreds of times in the months leading up to that fateful night in the Randolph home. In addition to those nearly 300 calls, they met in secret for long conversations outside of earshot of anyone else. A cousin said the two were in the illegal pill business and sold him Xanax and Oxy. And just before the night of Sharon's murder, Miller told his aunt that he and Tom Randolph were about to receive a large sum of money. Investigators believe Tom had basically been grooming this man to do his bidding for months. And then the real smoking gun. It turns out that Tom had another wife who died from a gunshot wound to the head. This one was named Becky Ray Galt, and she had been his second wife over in Clearfield, Utah. They were married for 3 years before tragedy struck. On November 6, 1986, when Becky was found dead in their home, Tom said she had threatened to end her life the day before. He said she wanted some of the white powder they were addicted to, but he didn't want to go buy any, so she said she was just going to kill herself. He told her to go ahead. When he came home the next afternoon, she was dead in their bed with a pistol in her hand, so the medical examiner ruled it a death of her choosing. It just so happened that Becky had asked to borrow some money from her aunt before her death because they were behind on their rent and needed to get their lights turned back on. But Tom used the money to pay off the life insurance premiums he had on Becky, so lucky for him, he was about to profit from her death. But then a friend of Tom's came forward 2 years later. This man said that he and Tom had become friends through work, and when the man was laid off, he began doing handyman jobs for Tom. But Tom started asking weird questions, like, could the man ever hurt someone? Specifically, Tom's wife, Becky. Perhaps in a staged burglary. Sound familiar? Perhaps a bit like the murder of Tom's 6th wife? Tom told his handyman friend that he wanted the money from Becky's life insurance policies. Also familiar. After thinking he was in the clear for years, Tom was finally charged with Becky's murder. But then it got even more outlandish. While Tom was going to trial for the murder, he tried to hire someone to kill his handyman friend before the guy could testify against him. The only problem was that the guy he tried to plan this all out with was an undercover cop. Tom somehow convinced his new girlfriend to be the one to pay the guy. He must have had some kind of charm to get 6 wives and a girlfriend who would pay off a hitman for him. People describe him as a show-off and a narcissist, but they also say he was a manipulator and a real smooth talker. Tom was charged with conspiracy to commit murder, but was ultimately able to get a plea deal for a lesser charge of 3rd-degree felony witness tampering. All of the charges against his girlfriend were dropped as part of the deal, and in the end, he only served 18 months in prison after a parole board shortened his sentence by 2 years. Prosecutors actually asked for an early release because they wanted to be able to monitor him if he was going to be released into society, which is interesting. Tom went to trial in 1989 for Becky's murder, but a jury in Utah let him off. Knowing what we know now, it seems unthinkable that they would acquit him, but at the time, she was the first wife of his to die. There was no confession and no eyewitnesses, just circumstantial evidence like the life insurance policies. Tom's lawyer argued that Becky had tried to take her life before and had just succeeded this time. Nothing to see here. And the jurors were being asked to consider the death penalty, which is kind of a big deal. The prosecutor thinks in retrospect that the jury just couldn't stomach such a tough sentence. They acquitted him in only 4 hours. Once again a free man, Tom was able to collect the $250,000 from Becky's life insurance and also $2,500 from the city where he lived for quote-unquote unfairly prosecuting him. They said that they just made the deal with him to stop him from filing a nuisance lawsuit. Now 36 years old, he was about to finish his degree in political science at Weber State and was hoping to go on to law school. But even with his 3.67 grade point average, he knew he would be turned away from every law school with that felony on his record. In 1991, he asked a judge to reduce it to a misdemeanor. The judge said he first needed to complete his probation, but eventually everything related to that trial, The murder charge and the witness tampering was all expunged from his record because he was acquitted. So I'm not sure how detectives uncovered this information before the 2017 murder trial for Tom's sixth wife, Sharon, but they did. Maybe it was an old newspaper article or an interview. Becky's mom had said after that trial, "He's guilty and he's just going to kill somebody else's daughter, so beware." Quotes like that are going to follow you. At pretrial proceedings, Tom wore his long hair and pigtails that his lawyers would make him cut off before the jury saw him. Prosecutors asked to have information about the prior trial for Becky's murder admitted to prove motive and intent, and the court okayed the motion. Undoubtedly, this information helped the jury convict Tom on all counts: conspiracy to commit murder and two counts of murder with the use of a deadly weapon. His first wife, one of the two left alive, testified that they married in 1975 when she was only 18 years old and he was 20. He was controlling, manipulative, and psychologically abusive toward her, and also took out a life insurance policy in her name. She said Tom married his second wife, Becky, the day their divorce was final, and that she counseled Becky when their marriage was hard. Tom's third wife testified that he tried to kill her one time by accidentally shooting at her while cleaning his gun. A man testified that Tom tried the whole "hire you to kill my wife" during a staged burglary plot with him, too. A neighbor said that he heard the gunshots at about 8:33 p.m., but Tom didn't call 911 until 8:44. He told 911 that he heard the shot that killed Sharon, but then he told detectives that he didn't. Sharon's daughter testified that Tom left Sharon somewhere between 5 and 10 times in the 3 years they'd been together, and she was considering divorce. With everything stacked against him, Tom was sentenced to death. 3 years went by while Tom sat locked up, but then his attorneys appealed to the Nevada Supreme Court in December 2020. They offered several arguments as to why the evidence about the death of his second wife should have never been entered into trial, but the one I found most compelling is that, hey, he was actually acquitted of that murder. It doesn't really make sense for the prosecution to say that Becky's murder proves motive and intent when a jury found him not guilty of that murder. I mean, obviously, I think he was guilty of that murder, but it only matters what the jury says at the end of the day. The appeal also argued that the handyman friend from the murder of Tom's second wife, Becky, gave irrelevant and prejudicial testimony at the trial for the murder of Tom's sixth wife, Sharon. This guy testified about how he told Becky that Tom was coming for him, and Tom beat him as retribution. He was beaten so badly that his spleen was injured and his back muscles torn. And then, after administering this beating, Tom drove the man to his wife's job and dumped the guy in the parking lot outside her building. And then he walked inside and put his bloody gloves on the countertop for the man's wife to see. Then, when the man was later released from the hospital, Tom showed up to his house just hours later to beat him some more and steal his pain meds. There was no doubt that Tom was a really, really crappy person. But the Nevada Supreme Court said these bad acts didn't have anything to do with possibly killing his wife and shouldn't have been testified to at the most recent trial. They overturned Tom's 2017 conviction and death sentence. A new trial date was set. At this new trial, Tom wore hearing aid headphones and sat mostly expressionless. This time, only the events of 2008 could be mentioned by the prosecutors. Nothing about past wives, nor mysterious deaths, nor beating up any handymen. Still, the jury reached a verdict in fewer than 5 hours. On August 24, 2023, Thomas Randolph, now 68 years old, was found guilty of plotting to kill his sixth wife and the handyman he hired to kill her for the second time.
We, the jury in the above-entitled case, find the defendant, Thomas William Randolph, as follows. Count 1, conspiracy to commit murder. Guilty of conspiracy to commit murder. Count 2, murder with use of a deadly weapon, Sharon Randolph. Guilty of first-degree murder with use of a deadly weapon. Count 3, murder with use of a deadly weapon, Michael Miller. Guilty of first-degree murder with use of a deadly weapon. Dated this 24th day of August 2023, signed David Dyer. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, are these your verdicts as read? So say you one, so say you all.
Yes.
But Tom, having apparently gotten away with murder once, is always much too confident about his ability to do it again. His defense team filed a 700-page motion to outright dismiss the charges before his sentencing. It included what the Las Vegas Review-Journal called a rambling and at times illegible handwritten argument from Tom himself. Their argument is that Tom could never have a fair trial now because it's been too long and people have faded memories or are, you know, dead. Basically, it's not his fault that prosecutors were allowed to present evidence at his 2017 trial that was later ruled against by the Nevada Supreme Court, and he shouldn't be punished with a less than ideal trial now. Lawyers from both sides will respond by December 18th, and a new sentencing hearing is set for January 4th, 2024. I have faith that he's not going to get away with it this time. After Tom was found guilty again this year, Sharon Randolph's daughter said, "I'm so relieved, it's unbelievable. It's been 15 years, and it's been a twisted nightmare." She called her mom a kind, loving, and generous woman and said, "I'm absolutely ecstatic and thrilled and relieved that he's off the streets, that he cannot do this to another woman again, because he's a predator. He's a serious predator." Thomas Randolph's previous wives just might agree. While two of them died from gunshot wounds, his fifth wife died from cancer, and his fourth wife died in the recovery room after a heart surgery. The last one seems innocent enough, except that Tom was apparently the last person to see her alive. She appeared to be doing fine, but then he asked the woman's daughter to leave the room, and his wife suddenly died within 45 minutes. Tom wouldn't let the woman's daughter see the body. He wouldn't let an autopsy take place. He had his wife cremated within 24 hours, and he didn't let her daughter attend the funeral. And yet another man testified that Tom had offered him money to kill his fourth wife even before her surgery. And you'll never believe this, but Tom suggested that they could make it look like a burglary. Let's hope he's in prison long enough that he doesn't manage to find wife number seven. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.